The views expressed on this program are not necessarily the views of Lexington Community Radio or its board of directors. The views expressed are solely those of the programmers.
You are listening to Off the Cuff. Now, here's your host, Adam Banks.
Welcome, everybody, to Off the Cuff. I am Adam Banks coming at you live from Lexington, Kentucky. Thank you for listening to the show, and thank you for tuning in to WLXU 93.9 FM. In addition to listening to us on the radio, you can check out our Facebook live stream at Off the Cuff with Adam Banks, or you can download the Radio Lex app or stream us site at radiolex.us on your smartphone device to listen to us anywhere in the entire world. I am broadcasting from the Deborah Hensley Studios here at Radio Lex on North Limestone. It is January the 18th, 2024. And ladies and gentlemen, it is a big day, folks, because in just two days, your boy Adam Banks will be celebrating his 36th birthday. That is right. I am turning 36 years old. Amazing to even think about that I am getting that up in age, 4 years away from 40. But you know what? Being 36 years old, it doesn't bother me. I don't know why it's not bothered me yet. Maybe it'll bother me in a couple of days. But on January the 20th, 2024, it will be my official birthday. So why not just take this broadcast and set it aside to celebrate it? And I have had the opportunity to celebrate my birthday on the radio before. Last year, as a matter of fact, I celebrated my birthday on the radio, actually on my birthday, but we only broadcast this show on Thursdays. My birthday doesn't always fall on a Thursday. This year it falls on a Saturday, so why not just celebrate it today? Folks, being my birthday, usually I have birthday conversations. Like, for instance, a couple of years ago, maybe last year on the show, I talked about all of the number one hits that were on my birthday, on significant birthdays. Like, what was the number one hit in the country on my 16th, my 21st, my 25th, my 30th. I did all kinds of birthday topics. So, since it is my birthday episode, and we always like to talk about birthday topics, how about some general birthday facts? Because everybody around the globe shares one thing in common. We all have a birthday. Every single one of us have a day that we were born on. So all of these birthday facts apply to you. It says here that more people celebrate their birthdays in August than any other month. The other 2 months that rate high for birthdays are July and September. So it seems like people are getting frisky right around the holidays because people start having their babies in the summertime. You know, you got to do the math there. Count 9 months up and you'll realize that most people are reproducing around the holidays and having the babies in the summer. Close to 2 billion birthday cards are sent each year in the U.S. alone, accounting for nearly 58% of all cards sent. I want you to think about how many cards are sent out on Mother's Day, Father's Day, Christmas, Valentine's Day. But people sort of forget about birthdays. What keeps cards in business every single day is not a holiday, because there's not a holiday every day. It's the birthdays. Everybody has a birthday. So every day, cards are sent out because of birthdays. As a matter of fact, it says 2 billion birthday cards each year in the U.S. are sent out. 2 billion. The world's largest birthday cake was created in 1989 for the 100th birthday of the city of Fort Payne, Alabama. The cake weighed 128,238 pounds and 8 ounces and used 16,209 pounds of icing. That is a large and in charge birthday cake. The most famous rendition of Happy Birthday is when Marilyn Monroe sang to John F. Kennedy. She's saying, "Happy birthday, dear Mr. President," at Madison Square Garden on May 19th, 1962. Think about all of the times that song has been sang. Happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you. And the most famous rendition of all time was when Marilyn Monroe sang it to John F. Kennedy. And most people have probably heard the clip, seen the clip, or seen some type of rendition of the clip. But if you haven't, why not just let me play it here on the show for you? This is Marilyn Monroe singing Happy Birthday to John F. Kennedy. Take a listen.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday, Mr. President. Happy birthday to you.
And what makes this video so unique is because Marilyn Monroe and JFK had a thing for each other. They had a whole affair that was pretty public. Now, the media didn't really gravitate towards it because the media didn't really do things like that back then, but it was pretty known amongst most people that there was an affair going on between the president and, at one time, the most beautiful woman in the world, Marilyn Monroe. But that right there was the most famous rendition of the song Happy Birthday. Now, I've done a whole topic on the song Happy Birthday before. You probably know this next fact. It says here that the song Good Morning to You was written by Mildred Hill and Dr. Patty Hill in 1893 for kindergarten schools. Patty Hill later changed the lyrics to Happy Birthday after it gained popularity. And get this, the song Happy Birthday, it's still copyrighted, meaning you have to pay a royalty to play the song. So that's why in movies, every time you hear it, they're paying a pretty penny to have that played. Happy Birthday. Paul McCartney's birth certificate was auctioned in March of 1997 for a United States amount of $84,146,000. It is believed to be the world's most expensive birth certificate. In the 19th and early 20th centuries, a popular 21st birthday present was to have all of your teeth removed and replaced with a set of dentures. The idea was it would prevent the expense of dental treatment later in life. Or you could be like Kanye West and just get titanium teeth. The Sultan of Brunei hosted the world's most expensive birthday party to celebrate his 50th birthday on July 13, 1996. It cost $27.2 million in total to have his birthday party. But at his party, he had things like Michael Jackson performing, and that alone cost him $16 million. Just to have MJ perform at the birthday celebration. Anne Frank's world's famous diary that she was given. It was given to her as a present for her 13th birthday. William Shakespeare died on his 52nd birthday, April 23rd, 1616. That would be almost poetic, wouldn't it? To die on your birthday, the day that you were born is also the day that you die. It happens, I'm sure, all the time. But we know about William Shakespeare because he's famous. When your age and date of birth are the same, the day is special and is known as the golden birthday. So if you were born on the 22nd of the month, your golden birthday would be when you are 22 years old. So, for instance, I was born on January the 20th. So, my golden year was when I was 20 years old. So, if you were born on the 30th, your golden year is 30 years old. The most common birth date of the year is the 5th of October, which falls 9 months after the New Year's Eve. So, people really getting frisky on New Year's Eve, or maybe it's just people where it's a new year, it's a new clean slate, they're wanting to start a family, and they feel like that, why not start our family on the brink of a new year? The least common birthday in the U.S. is May the 22nd, not counting leap years, which is interesting because my dad's birthday is on the 20th, so he came at a very unpopular time. Cards that play a song when you open them use more computing power than was used to send a man to the moon. makes sense. I love those cards that you open and it plays a little tune. I had no idea that it cost or it had to use that much power. Don't get that card wet. I would assume that something that has that much power could probably electrocute you. And then finally, the last general birthday fact is Shirley Temple. I'm sure you guys remember that famous, iconic child actress. She received 135,000 presents for her 8th birthday. Keep in mind, Shirley Temple at one point in time was the most famous child in the world. So, 8 years old, 8th birthday party, 135,000 presents from all of her fans, family, friends. That's a lot. I would be lucky to get 3 this year from my 36, but hey, that's the difference in turning 8 and turning 36 years old. But folks, it is my birthday, and that is some general birthday facts. Every year, I like to just talk about what I've learned over the last so many years of my life, what I've learned in the last 36 years of my life is not really much more that I learned the last 35. I just have more life experience. And you know, I have conjured up a lot of life experience just in the last year, the last 12 months. So much has happened. So much I had to deal with. So much has changed. So much has both good and bad. But it just made life just even more life. Life in general is always about getting wiser. And I feel like I am another year older and another year wiser. And I feel like as long as I can put forth good into the world and I am here for a reason, I am doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And one of the things that I love doing is coming to you live every week and entertaining you on the radio. And I'm so glad that I'm still able to do this. And I am able to do this at this point in my life and at this age in my life. But ladies and gentlemen, we are going to celebrate it all episode today. Happy birthday to me. You are listening to Off the Cuff with Adam Banks. We will be right back. Everybody to Off the Cuff. Adam Banks here with you. The 2024 Primetime Emmy Awards were handed out in Los Angeles this past Monday night, honoring the best in television. Blackish star Anthony Anderson hosted the ceremony for the first time. I don't know why it is so hard for Hollywood to find a good host, but it must be because, yeah, he didn't do terrible, but he did nothing. Anthony Anderson did nothing to impress me or wow me as the host of the Emmys. And you would think, being in the land of entertainment, Hollywood, where all of these people live, where the center of entertainment is, you would think they would be able to find, out of all those pool of people, of entertainers, you would think they would be able to find a captivating television host to host an award show. I think the last good host for the Emmys was Conan O'Brien. And I believe that the last time he hosted the Emmys was in 2002-ish, 3-ish, which was over 20 years ago. That just says a lot about the hosting personalities we have in Hollywood. But nonetheless, Anthony Anderson did host the Emmys, and it was the 75th annual ceremony. So a lot of nods to old television shows. A lot of reunions took place. There was the reunion of Grey's Anatomy, Cheers, Wings, Frasier. All kinds of iconic television shows that would be considered oldies reunited for the Emmys because it was the 75th annual of the ceremony, and they wanted to really kind of just pay homage to all of the old great television shows throughout history. So that made it a little bit more entertaining than usual for the Emmys. Succession, which is the theme music you're hearing right now, led the way with 27 nominations for its 4th and final season and brought home 6 Emmys Monday night, including the coveted award for Outstanding Drama Series for the 3rd time. Actors Matthew McFadden, Sarah Snook, and Kieran Culkin received Emmys for their performances on the show. Again, I'll say this. I do think that Succession was a little overhyped, and that's coming from somebody who watched it from episode one to the end. It was a good show, but I wouldn't even put it in my top 25 best shows of all time. I think that it had potential to be better, but hey, it wasn't. They could have went just a little bit further with it. Every episode, when you think they could have done a little bit more than that, it's because they could have. But the critics, they loved it. That's why it was the winner of most awards at the Emmys. But on the comedy side, FX's The Bear was honored with 6 Emmys, including Best Comedy Series and Netflix Beef, which was a miniseries. It earned 5 Emmys, including Outstanding Limited or Anthology Series. It's crazy now that all of this is over. The television awards have been given out for the year 2023. It's crazy to think that the greatest television show of all time never received an Emmy. It was snubbed again. Better Call Saul. It made history at the Emmys because they have been nominated 53 times but never won once. So they are 53-0 at the Emmys. A show that I felt like truly was the best television show on TV didn't win an Emmy. Not even for writing, editing, acting, cinematography. Blows my mind. But that about wraps it up for the major awards for television for the year of 2023. And last week, we talked about the Golden Globes. And because it was the Golden Globes, and the Golden Globes likes to honor movies, we talked about some of the most saddest scenes from cinematic history. And since the Emmys just passed, and the Emmys talk about television rather than movies, I would kind of like to do something very similar because it is the Emmys. So there's been a lot of great acting moments in television. Hell, television today is just as good as movies on the big screen. Some of your best moments of watching something comes from television. And there's been a lot of great television monologues throughout time. And so what I have done is I have created a list for the audience of what I feel like is some of the best monologues in TV history. Now, what a monologue is, an acting monologue, is when one actor basically has the floor to shine. He isn't sharing the scene with many people. Yeah, there's people in the scene, but this scene is for her or him to shine, meaning they have the most dialogue and a lot of emphasis is focused on their performance. So the following clips that I have decided to play is clips that I feel like actors had the best monologues, where the actor really shines. And the first clip that I want to play for the audience is one of the best TV monologues in television history. Comes from the show Breaking Bad, which I feel like is one of the best TV shows of all time. And this particular scene is of Bryan Cranston's character, Walter White, when he looks at his wife and he tells her that he is the one who knocks. He is the danger. And in this particular scene, you got Walt and his wife in the bedroom. And his wife is worried about Walt and this new drug business he got in. And she feels like that he is always in danger. He's in danger. They're in danger. And he reminds her that he is not in danger. He reminds her that he is the danger, so everybody else needs to be scared and everybody else needs to be concerned. So take a listen at Bryan Cranston giving this great television monologue in Breaking Bad, telling his wife that he is the danger and he is the one who knocks.
Walt, I've said it before, if you are in danger, we go to the police.
No, I don't want to hear about the police.
I do not say that lightly. I know what it could do to this family, but if it's the only real choice we have, if it's either that or you getting shot when you open your front door,
don't want to hear about the
you're
police.
Not some hardened criminal, Walt. You are in over your head.
No.
That's what we tell them. That's the truth.
No, it's not the truth.
Of course it is. The school teacher, cancer, desperate for money.
Okay, we're done here.
Roped into working for, unable to even quit. You told me that yourself, Walt. Jesus, what was I thinking? Walt, please, let's both of us stop trying to justify this whole thing and admit you're in danger.
Who are you talking to right now? Who is it you think you see? Do you know how much I make a year? I mean, even if I told you, you wouldn't believe it. Do you know what would happen if I suddenly decided to stop going into work? A business big enough that it could be listed on the NASDAQ goes belly up. It disappears. It ceases to exist without me. No, you clearly don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
And there you go, folks. That intense delivery from Bryan Cranston is what makes this number one on my list of one of the best TV monologues in history. Now, I'm not ranking this in any order of what's the best out of all of these lists that I, or all of these clips that I'm playing, but that certainly makes my list. Okay, coming up next on my list is one of the best TV monologues throughout history. Comes from the TV show Shameless, which aired on Showtime, and this particular monologue is from Fiona, played by Emmy Rossum, and Fiona is having an argument with her mom, who ran out on her when she was just a little girl. And because of that, her mom left her to raise herself and her siblings from a very young age. And her mom finally decides to come back into their life, but not to be a mom. She wants to take the youngest child from Fiona, the daughter, because now the mom decides that she wants to be a mother because she's in a new relationship. So she wants to take her youngest baby and raise the baby. But Fiona refuses. And when Fiona is refusing to give her baby brother up to the real mom, she gives this heartfelt monologue. Take a listen.
This isn't about you. This is about you. This is about what you didn't do. It's about what I did. And you know what? I did a fucking job. Debbie is class president. She's on the debate team going to nationals. And Lip, he's top of his class. He set the curve. Ian was promoted in ROTC, and he tested out of English. And Carl made something blow up for his science fair. And you know what? They did it all. No thanks to you, because you weren't here.
And I appreciate that, Fiona, but I'm here now, and Liam belongs with me.
He doesn't even know who you are.
I'm his mother.
You are my mother, too.
And there you go, folks. Just a little monologue from Emmy Rossum in Shameless. And the audio might not give the scene justice because of the facial expressions and the emotion you could see in the scene, but I definitely feel like that is one of the most heart-wrenching monologues in TV history, when Fiona was talking about how she had to raise her kids and her siblings, and because of that, they turned out great. No thanks to the real mom. All right, one of the next scenes that I'm going to play on the list, and this scene's I feel like is one of the best monologues in TV history. It's from the show The Newsroom with Jeff Daniels, and Jeff Daniels' character is a news anchor. And at the very beginning of The Newsroom, I'm talking episode 1, scene 1, this is when this monologue is given. This is when a bunch of people are invited on stage at this little conference where there's a bunch of students in the audience from colleges, and I don't know what you call that. What do you call that little symposium type thing? And they're asking questions to these people on stage, and they've got different politicians on stage, and they've got Jeff Daniels' character, who is a news anchor, and they got him on stage. And one of the students, one of the college students in the audience, asked everybody on stage, "What is the greatest? Why is America the greatest country in the world?" And all of these politicians are going around giving very generic answers. Well, freedom is why we're the best country in the world, et cetera, et cetera. And then it gets to Jeff Daniels, and he says this particular monologue here where he talks about how America is not the greatest country anymore. And he didn't want to answer it at first because he didn't want to give this spiel on why he feels like America is not the greatest country anymore. Take a listen at this TV monologue, which I feel like is one of the best in TV history.
What about the people? Why is America
not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer.
You're saying
yes.
Let's talk about...
Fine. Sharon, the NEA is a loser. Yeah, it accounts for a penny out of our paycheck, but he gets to hit you with it anytime he wants. It doesn't cost money. It costs votes. It costs airtime and column inches. You know why people don't like liberals? Because they lose. If liberals are so smart, how come they lose so them always?
Hey!
And with a straight face, you're going to tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom? Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yeah, you, sorority girl, just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only 3 categories: number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are without a doubt a member of the worst period generation period ever period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the you're talking about. Yosemite? Sure used to be. We stood up for what was right. We fought for moral reasons. We passed laws, struck down laws for moral reasons. We waged wars on poverty, not poor people. We sacrificed. We cared about our neighbors. We put our money where our mouths were, and we never beat our chest. We built great big things, made ungodly technological advances, explored the universe, cured diseases, and we cultivated the world's greatest artists and the world's greatest economy. We reached for the stars, acted like men. We aspired to intelligence. We didn't belittle it. It didn't make us feel inferior. We didn't identify ourselves by who we voted for in the last election, and we didn't scare so easy. We were able to be all these things and do all these things because we were informed by great men, men who were revered. First step in solving any problem is recognizing there is one. America is not the greatest country in the world anymore.
And there you go, folks. America is not the greatest country in the world anymore. And that was how the show started on The Newsroom, and that is a show that is on Showtime, or HBO, excuse me, and it's either HBO or Showtime, and that is starring Jeff Daniels. Okay, I've got one more TV monologue to play, and this comes from a TV movie, and yes, this still counts as television because it was a TV movie, and sometimes movies are only made for television. They're not made for the big screen, and this particular TV movie was on HBO, and it was called The Normal Heart. And this movie was about the spread of HIV and AIDS in the early 1980s in the United States. And Julia Roberts is a doctor who is wheelchair bound in this television movie. And she is one of the first doctors to do research on AIDS. And she is trying to tell everybody that this virus can spread both in the gay community and the heterosexual community, because a lot of people didn't know much about AIDS in the 80s. They thought it was the gay disease. Only gay people could get it. And she is trying to let everybody know, in because in this particular scene, she is basically pitching her ideas to get funded for her research so she could do more research on the virus of HIV. And she is in front of all of these government officials that are able to give her money. And she is presenting her research. And at the end of her presentation, they deny funding for her to continue studying HIV and AIDS. And she is so desperate to get funded, she gives this monologue to the government, people who are sitting there just denying her when they could easily approve her funding so she could save the millions and millions of lives lost to HIV and AIDS. So take a listen to Julia Roberts in this scene from The Normal Heart, where she is talking about, or she is trying to get funded to do more research for HIV and AIDS. Take a listen.
Dr. Bruckner, the government's position is this. There are $5 million in the pipeline for which we have received over $55 million worth of requests.
$5 million doesn't seem quite right for some 2,000 cases. The government spent $3 million investigating 7 deaths from Tylenol. We're entering the third year.
We have voted to reject your application for funding.
Oh? I'd like to hear your reasons.
The direction of the research you're suggesting is imprecise and unfocused.
Oh, it is it? You don't know what's going on any more than I do. Could you tell me precisely why you're blocking my efforts?
Dr. Bruckner, there are now other investigators. This is no longer only your disease, though you seem to think it is.
Oh, I do I? And you're here to take it away from me, is that it? Well, I'll let you in on a little secret, Doctor. You can have it. I didn't want it in the first place. You think it's a privilege to watch young men die? What am I arguing with you for? You do not know enough to study boiled water. How dare you come down here and judge me?
We only serve on this peer review panel at the behest of Dr. Murray.
Another idiot. And by the way, a closeted homosexual doing everything in his power to sweep this under the rug. And I vowed I'd never say anything like that in public. How does it always happen that all of the idiots are always on your team? How can you refuse to fund my research or not invite me to participate in yours? Your National Institutes of Health received my first request for money 2 years ago. It took you 1 year just to print up application forms. It's taken you 3 years for my first reported case just to show up here for a look, and the paltry amount of money you are forcing us to beg for out of the $4 billion you now receive each and every year to protect the health of the American people won't come to anyone before only God knows when. A promising virus has been discovered in France. Why do you refuse to cooperate with the French? Why are we told not to cooperate with the French? Just so you can steal a Nobel Prize while something is being passed around that causes death? Women have been discovered to have it in Africa, where it is clearly transmitted heterosexually. It is only a question of time. We could all be dead before you do anything. You want my data? You want my ideas? You want my papers? Take them! Just do something with them! I am imprecise and unfocused, and you are all idiots!
And she just wheels away after her monologue in her wheelchair. And I felt like that the desperation from her voice and her face is what makes this scene and monologue so great. A lot of great moments of acting on television throughout time, and those are just a few that I felt like were worth mentioning. But a lot of great moments in television overall, and that's why I love the Emmys, is because it is that award show, which is kind of like the Oscars for movies. The Emmys is the Oscars for television, and I love the Emmys because it does recognize great work like we just heard. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take another quick break. Stick with us. We will be right back.
It's Britney, bitch. And I just wanna dance with you.
Welcome back, everybody, to Off the Cuff. Adam Banks here with you. Britney Spears may be the princess of pop, but she is disputing rumors that she plans to release a new album, because there was a little rumor floating around social media that Britney Spears had a new album coming out. But Britney took to Instagram on January the 3rd to say this. She said on Instagram in a post, she said, "Just so we're clear, most of the news is trash. They keep saying I'm turning to random people to do a new album." She said, "I will never return ever to the music industry." She continued, "When I write for fun or I write for other people." She added that she's written over 20 songs for other people in the past 2 years. She says, quote, "I am a ghostwriter and I honestly enjoy it that way." So Britney Spears, folks, says she will never return to the music industry. She's done. So kiss Britney goodbye. She wrote a book earlier, well, I should say last year, not earlier in the year. It was last year at this point, in October. It was called The Woman in Me. And she made several bombshell claims over the last four decades of her life. She talked about the conservatorship that ended in 2001. It lasted for 13 years, and it was, she had her whole life basically controlled by her father, her finances, her personal choices, everything. And it also looked into her relationship with Justin Timberlake. You found out a lot of stuff about that, including that she had an abortion when she became pregnant with his child. And while she sat there trying to deal with it, she remembers him just strumming his guitar in the background. And she remembers just being devastated. She also talked about in her book about her marriage with Kevin Federline, whom she has two now teenage boys with. And she talked about her divorce and how he used her for money. And then she talks about her relationship with her latest man, Sam Asghari, who she married. They're now divorced. It only lasted 14 months. But a lot was covered in her book. But Britney says that she'll never be back. Imagine if that's true. Imagine if she never returns. The Princess of Pop will never be on stage again. You'll never see her perform again. That's like Madonna saying she's never going to sing. Or if MJ or Elvis was alive, they were saying they're never going to perform again. But at the end of the day, you got to do what makes you happy. Britney says she likes being a ghostwriter, writing songs for other people. She don't like being a performer. It's easy for us to sit back and watch somebody's life as an audience member, from a POV of somebody just watching in the audience. But to live the life of somebody like she has, it would be a little different. I would say, really, she's probably done it all she wants to do. And the unstoppable danger. So, Britney Spears, if she decides to step away from the music business and never perform again, she could be one of the most famous people to ever just quit the industry for good. Think about that. There's been a lot of people that have been famous in the past that has just quit the entertainment industry for good here. And I actually have a list of celebrities who were very famous at one point, and then all of a sudden, they just quit the entertainment industry for good. Never decided to act again, sing again, play again. They had enough of their fame and fortune, and they decide to call it quits. So I would like to go over that list after we take Off the Cuff's Song of the Week break. So, ladies and gentlemen, sit back and enjoy a little Beck with the song Girl. We'll be back after the song. I saw her, yeah, I saw her with the black tongue tied. Well, it seems that everyone wants to be famous these days, but believe it or not, some very popular celebrities and public figures have decided to step out of the spotlight. We talked about, right before we took the Song of the Week break, about Britney Spears saying that she's done with the entertainment industry. Well, if she leaves, like I said, she possibly could be the most famous to ever leave, but she certainly isn't the only one who's been famous before to just all of a sudden decide to up and quit. There is Cameron Diaz, You guys know who Cameron Diaz is, a very, very popular actor. She decided to call it quits, and she gave up a very lucrative career just so she could be a mother. There's Michael J. Fox. He retired for good in 2020 after he decided that he felt like that his disease was becoming too much on him. So you have to hand it to him for working as long as he did. He was diagnosed with Parkinson very early in his life, but continued working. He finally decided in 2020 to call it quits. Think about how famous Michael J. Fox was at one point. He says he's no longer going to be working in the industry. Daniel Day-Lewis, a widely considered one of the greatest actors of all time, he unexpectedly announced his retirement in 2017. Karen Parsons, who forever in our lives will be known as Hillary Banks from The Fresh Prince, she retired from acting in the early 2000s. She says that she decided to focus her talents on being a writer, and she enjoys in her spare time writing and learning about history and doing her nonprofit business. Shelley Duvall, who is known for her iconic roles in films like The Shining and Popeye, she decided to tap out of Hollywood in 2002. She went crazy. If you go back and watch interviews of Shelley Duvall, she did an interview with Dr. Phil where Dr. Phil really exposed her craziness, and I don't think Dr. Phil did her any favors, did her any justice. He really took advantage of Shelley Duvall because she suffers from some type of mental social illness. But think about what a great actress she was in the films she was in. The Shining, she was great. Here's Johnny. She was wonderful. Cinematic legend Joe Pesci. You guys know him from Home Alone, Goodfellas, Casino. He retired from acting in 1999. He made a unexpected return in 2019 for The Irishman and actually did another recent project. And it's on Peacock. But the reason he did both of those projects is because Martin Scorsese has been the director and producer for both projects. So it seems that only Martin Scorsese is the only person that can get Joe Pesci to work. Angus T. Jones quit Hollywood after a very successful career. He was the little boy from Two and a Half Men. He decided that he felt like that he was portraying a filthy character on a filthy show, and he felt like his religion didn't allow him to really practice his religion the right way by remaining on that show. Rick Moranis, he is known from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Spaceballs, The Flintstones. He decided to quit acting at the age of 35 years old because his wife passed away and he wanted to stay home and raise his kids. Maria Wilson from Matilda, that little girl from Matilda, Miracle on 34th Street, she decided to quit acting. She was also in Mrs. Doubtfire, too. She was the little girl in there. Frankie Muniz, he is the actor from Agent Cody Banks, Frankie in the Middle. What was that show that Frankie Muniz was in? Malcolm in the Middle. Yeah, he decided that after growing up, he wanted to focus on a new career, and that was racing cars instead of acting. Freddie Prinze Jr. retired from acting in 2003. He was a heartthrob for a lot of women, but he decided to quit acting after one bad experience with an actor on a television show. The actor was Kiefer Sutherland, and they were filming the show 24. Freddie Prinze Jr. says, "I hated every moment of working with Kiefer Sutherland. I hated every moment of it. He was terrible. So I just sort of stopped acting." And he said after this bad experience, he never wanted to act again. And he has since went on to go work for Vince McMahon at the World Wrestling Entertainment. Gwyneth Paltrow, she is no longer acting. She had a very successful award-winning career as an actress. She quit acting in 2019 and started her own business. John Hughes. You guys know John Hughes, or if you don't know John Hughes, you know his movies, Home Alone, The Breakfast Club, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, just to name a few. One of the most prolific directors of all time, he decided to quit directing movies and stop making movies in 1994 because he says he wanted a more normal life. But just think about how many iconic movies he already made, so he didn't have to work again. He was only 59 when he decided. Jonathan Taylor Thomas. He was the actor from Home Improvement. He was the actor from The Lion King. He played Simba. He left acting in 2005 to further his education at Harvard and Columbia. Meg Ryan. She was the actress who starred with Dennis Quaid. I'm sorry. She starred with Tom Hanks in You Got Mail, but she decided to get out of the spotlight in 2001 after her and her husband Dennis Quaid divorced. Shirley Temple, who we talked about earlier in the show, she got out of acting at the age of 85 after She died at the age of 85. She got out of acting at the age of 39 because she said she had enough of acting. She had been doing it since she was a little girl. She said she wanted to be in a new role, which was the ambassador for the United Nations. Dave Chappelle quit acting or quit stand-up. Elizabeth Hurley quit acting. She was the woman from Bedazzled and Austin Powers. One of the hottest women I've ever seen. She just decided to up and quit. So a lot of people have acted before, sang before, been a stand-up comedian before, and have gotten fame and have got a lot of notoriety, but decided after they attained it that they were done. So there has been a lot of people that have got in the industry, have made themselves famous, that have made themselves a really lucrative career, but just decided one day, out of the blue, to leave the industry behind, and some even take on new careers, and some people just opt for a more normal life. But that, folks, is a few people who were very famous but got out of the entertainment industry, apparently just like Britney Spears is doing. But, folks, we still have one more segment to go right here on Off the Cuff with Adam Banks. Stick with us. We will be right back. Everybody to Off the Cuff. Adam Banks here with you. Last segment of the hour. Just 2 days shy from my birthday, where I will turn 36 years old. I remember my dad being 36 years old. I do. I remember one time going through a drive-thru at Dairy Queen and a lady asking my dad how old he was, and he said, I'm 36. And I don't know why I remember that, but I do. And it's just hard to believe that now I am that age. So if I'm ever going through a drive-thru at Dairy Queen and somebody says, hey, how old are you? I would have to say 36 because that's the truth. I don't feel 36. I don't feel like I look 36, but I would say through the eyes of a child, I probably do look 36. And I'm sure this is probably what the average 36-year-old felt like. You know, we always think people, when they're older than us, we always feel like they probably feel much older. But honestly, we're shocked to, one of the biggest things I feel like that shocks us with age is that when we reach a certain age, we actually realize that, hey, it really don't feel that bad to be this age. I actually feel pretty good, which gives us all hope, right? I want to feel good at 50, at 60, at 70. But before we go, folks, I feel like it is appropriate to give Off the Cuff's quote of the week. And in light of my birthday, I decided to go with this quote from Abraham Lincoln. And Abraham Lincoln, if you don't know who he is, he was an American lawyer, politician, and statesman who served as the 16th president of the United States from 1861 until his assassination in 1865. And Abe Lincoln said this: in the end, it's not the years in your life that count, it's the life in your years. And I love that particular quote, folks, because a lot of the times we measure a fulfilling life by how long somebody lives, but in reality, it's not about the duration of a life that makes a fulfilling life. It's the amount of life that you live during the time that you're alive. So I know a lot of people who died at 30, 35 years old, but they lived a full life of what some people don't even get to experience in 80 years. So it really doesn't matter how long that you stay on this earth. You could be on this earth 70, 80, 90, 100 years. And at the end of it, you look back and you realize that you never really lived at all. You never experienced anything, tasted anything, seen anything, felt anything. But then, on the contrary, you've got somebody that dies at 25 and you look back on their life and they had a whole life full of fulfilling things. People that loved them, things that they loved, places that they went, places that they seen, things that they touched, things that they got to experience. That's why it's important every day to take advantage and to be grateful of being alive. Don't be sad when you get older. Don't be depressed on your birthday. Getting older is an absolute blessing. It just reminds you that you're alive. I know a lot of people who passed away at 25, 26 years old. They never got to see 30. They never got to see 35. And as a matter of fact, I've not yet got to see 36. I'm still 2 days away from seeing that age. I want to see it, but I also want to see 40 and 50 and 60 and beyond. And I hope that in the years that I do live, I do hope to have a very fulfilling life, and I hope great things happen within those years. I don't just want to go through the motions and just be alive and just exist. There's far more to life than just existing. And I'm afraid that a lot of people, they wake up at 70 years old and they realized that their whole life they've just been existing and they've not really lived. But ladies and gentlemen, that gives you all the reason just to go out, start fresh, and make your life meaningful. I know I am. But folks, that's about all we have right here on Off the Cuff with Adam Banks this week. If you like what you heard today, you'll probably like our previous episodes. So you can follow Off the Cuff on podcast to download all of our previous episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. You can follow the show on social media at The Adam Banks. You can follow me, the host, on social media at The Adam Banks. The social media for Off the Cuff is Off the Cuff with Adam Banks. The social media for me is The Adam Banks. We release new episodes every Thursday from 4 to 5 right here on WLXU 93.9 FM, which means I will be back same time, same place. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Off the Cuff, and I am the king of radio, Adam Banks. I will see you next week. I'm missing you.